Most of you were here for the lesson this morning, so I'll summarize it with three words, three sentences, I'd better say. As the church, we're obligated to meet. Number two, as the church, we decide where to meet and when to meet, and thereby commit ourselves to meet. Number three, we ought to make our assemblies as helpful and edifying as possible. Now, going on from what we said this morning, let's talk about the idea of a Sunday night meeting just as an example. Most of you have come from a background where Sunday night is a traditional meeting of the church. Let me ask you this question. If our congregation decided not to meet on Sunday night, how would you spend the extra time? Before you answer that, and I'm not going to ask you to answer it publicly, but just within your mind. But before you answer it, you need to realize, and I think most of you do, that considerably more than 1 hour would be freed up by that decision, because there's the getting ready time and there's the driving time, and most people arrive a few minutes early and stay a few minutes after. So we're talking here really about a minimum of 2 hours, and in some cases considerably more than that. How would you spend that extra time on Sunday night? Have you ever heard somebody say, you know, I can learn more Bible at home in 2 hours than I can learn at church in 2 months? I don't doubt that. I think that probably is true. And one of the reasons it is true is because the purpose of the assembly is not primarily to learn the Bible. But it interests me that if we do free up that 2 hours on Sunday night, that's not what usually happens with the extra time. I know good and well that in most cases, what happens with the extra time is 2 more hours of television that's mediocre at best. And that's just the way people function. The guy that's really into studying the Bible seems to be the same guy who usually attends all of the assemblies. The guy who saves time on Sunday night and Wednesday night by absenting himself from the assembly usually can't find time to study the Bible at home very much, if at all. There are exceptions, of course. But I've observed these things to be generally true. Now, it would appear, wouldn't it, that a congregation that only meets once a week, say, on Sunday morning, it would appear that a congregation that only meets on Sunday morning is thereby leaving itself more time for evangelism and more time for Bible study outside of the assembly. But in fact, it's been my observation that congregations that meet only once a week are usually dead or dying. And I could point you to many examples of this through the years. Usually dead or dying with very little evangelism and very little Bible study apparent. I'm not saying it would have to be that way, but I'm interested that it so often seems to be that way, and I've wondered why. Since they have more time than the people who meet more often, why does there seem to be less evangelism and less Bible study? Have you ever heard somebody say, you've got to spend money to make money? And you know what they mean by that. You've got to have seed money. You've got to invest in order to try to make something from it. Have you ever heard anybody be told that if you want to be less tired, you need to exercise because that will get your blood flowing and tone your muscles up and pep you up? And sometimes that's good advice. The idea is that you need to spend energy in order to get energy. And that may be part of the dynamic that God has built into the assemblies of the saints. Why does he want us to meet anyway? To worship him? Well, that's certainly a part of it. But what does he want our worship for? I remember in the Western Civilization reading program at KU years ago when we read the book of Isaiah there, and I was the only Christian in the class, one of the topics of discussion was that it seems like God is on a huge ego trip, which was the way it was put at the time, that God's on a huge ego trip. Look at all these things he talks about that he wants people to do for him so that they'll know he's God and all of that. Well, why does God want these things from us? Why does God want us to worship him? God wants us to worship him because he knows that we need to do that. That's a part of how we're made and how we're built. God is developing a people of a certain character to spend eternity with, and the assemblies of the saints are a part of the regimen of training for those people. You come to church, and a number of things can happen when you come to church. I already said that if you come to church and are bored, that may not be entirely your fault. But I will also say that if you come to church and are bored, it's not necessarily a commentary on the meeting. It may be a commentary on your heart. Assembling with the saints is a discipline, just like push-ups is a discipline. Here we do the calisthenics of learning to bear with one another, learning to confront one another in love when necessary. I mentioned the few minutes before the assembly and the few minutes after the assembly. Those minutes can be important. During those times, we may learn to do all the 21 one another's of the New Testament, to learn what it means for the church to be God's hospital, for the church to be God's mess hall. Most of us, and it's a striking thought, wouldn't even know one another if it were not for the church and the assemblies of the saints. If the Lord had not started his church, most of us would not know one another. David Landis and I could have grown up right across the school ground from each other and never known one another. He was 2 years ahead of me in school, and so we probably wouldn't have met in class. We could have grown up right where we did and not even known one another had it not been for the relationships with those who are of like precious faith. Many of us find that these relationships rise above those that we have with our own physical family. At the assemblies of the saints, these relationships are cemented and strengthened. These relationships are tested and toned. The assemblies of the saints are a discipline to produce a certain result in us. Doctors have told me that if I don't get out and walk, I'll probably just keel over and die. And they're probably all too correct in that estimation. So I do go out and walk once in a while, not nearly as often as I ought to, I'm sure, but I do go out and walk. I don't enjoy it, but I do it because I think it's good for me. It seems like a terrible waste of time, except that it's something that I need to do, even though I don't always like it. Now, we can agree that some people like walking better than others. I know people who just love to walk. I don't like to walk. But I'm out there walking the same time they are sometimes because it's something that I should do. It's something that I need to do. And assembling with the saints is like that. Some people just naturally are more people-oriented. Some people just naturally like assembling with the saints more than other people do. When it comes to Wednesday night, if I were to consult my own personal preferences about it, there are many times when I would prefer not to go. But I think that on balance, it's good for me to go. And not only that, but I have a commitment. If I don't go, that might discourage you who do go. And after all, we agreed together to do this, and I don't want to be responsible for discouraging you. I think that sometimes some people may not realize just how corrosive it can be to the body of Christ when you absent yourself from an assembly that you should be a part of. You may not realize it because you're not there to see what happens when you're not there. By definition, you're not there to see what happens when you're not there. You may not even realize that you'll be missed. Let me give you some examples of what I'm talking about, because I think it's important to come to terms with this on a practical level. When I was a boy, I often visited up at a place called Bramer in North Missouri, where my grandparents were members. The attendance on Sunday morning at Bramer back in those years was about 100. Nearly every seat in the place was filled. And on Sunday night, the attendance was 4. My grandparents and one other old couple came on Sunday night. They were the only ones who came. When I was there, the attendance was 5. I increased the attendance on Sunday night by 25%. Well, I remember one day when I happened to be there one summer, a young evangelist from Kansas City came up there to speak on this Sunday, Sunday morning and Sunday night. He spoke in the morning, and we came back tonight at night to hear him. It wasn't just the usual Sunday night crowd. There were a few more people than 4 there. There may have been 10 or 15. But it was such an amazing change from that morning. This young evangelist couldn't understand it. He wondered, well, did I say something that offended everybody? What's going on here? And he was told, no, this is just the way it usually is. But he acted like he couldn't hardly talk. My point is that the people who were not there on Sunday night weren't around to see his consternation, weren't around to see the effect of their not being there. I knew a young man a few years after that. What I just told you probably happened in the early 60s. In the early 70s, I knew a young man who was a new convert and was just really on fire for the Lord. His wife had been raised in the church, but he had not, and he'd come in from the outside. And he was really involved in the work of the Lord. His name was Dean Bird. He lived over in the Lecompton, Kansas area. He was very interested in studying the Bible and learning and was making great progress in his development as a Christian. And Dean one Sunday morning went out to a small congregation in eastern Kansas to speak for them. After the morning meeting, one of the brethren said to him, "Now, Dean, I'm on to speak tonight, but I'd like to have you come back and speak instead of me. Dean said he would do that, but when Dean went back that night and spoke, he found that the brother who had asked him to speak that night didn't even bother to show up. Apparently the reason for wanting Dean to speak was so the brother himself wouldn't have to go. Well, that was discouraging to this new convert. He told me it was discouraging. And today, he's not part of the church. I'm not saying that's the reason, but I don't think that helped too much. One time, a few years after that, a brother insisted that I come and speak at his congregation on a particular Sunday, and so I consented to it and went ahead and went through with that, even though I was in college at the time. It was in early May, and I had two term papers that were due the very next day, and I knew I was going to be up all night writing them, but I went ahead and fulfilled this commitment. It was about 130 miles away from my home. I went over there to speak, and after I got there to speak, I was told that the brother who had wanted me to come so bad, we just can't hardly survive unless you come and speak for us. The brother who had wanted me to come so bad was out planting corn. He didn't even bother to come to church that day because it was such a good day for planting corn. And while I was up speaking, this was a rural meeting house set out among the fields. While I was up speaking that Sunday morning, I could see this brother going back and forth on his tractor in the field next door while he was planting his corn. Well, that was discouraging. I never did tell him how discouraging that was to me. Maybe I should have. He's dead now. It's too late. But he's no longer there, and the congregation itself is no longer there. It just dissolved. If you don't have people with the commitment, a congregation cannot even sustain. Sometimes we just don't realize how missed we will be. Let me give you an example of that I learned the hard way personally. And this happened back a few years after the other examples that I've given you. This was really fairly recently. It happened up in Des Moines. I had come down from Minnesota, and I stopped in Des Moines because I had a wedding there, and it turned out that this was going to be just right before their Labor Day weekend meeting, and I was also speaking at that. So I stayed at Audrey Brady's house. A lot of people here have known her through the years. She's been around a long time. Came in for a wedding rehearsal on Thursday night, and I stayed at Audrey Brady's house. And then we had the wedding on Friday, and I stayed at Audrey Brady's house on the Friday night. Well, the Labor Day meeting started on the Saturday, and I was supposed to speak a couple times on the Sunday of that Labor Day meeting. What I did not tell Audrey, what she didn't know, was that I had a commitment with some other people over in Nebraska for the Saturday. And so I wasn't going to be at the Labor Day meeting on the Saturday. And I was going to tell Audrey as I was out on the way out the house on the Saturday morning, I was going to tell her that I won't see you at the meeting today because I got to go over to Omaha, and I'll be back late tonight to be here for tomorrow. But she was on the phone when I stepped out the door, and I thought, well, she's not going to miss me with all those hundreds of people that they'll have over there. The building will be full. She won't miss me over there today, and I'll just see her tomorrow. So I just waved at her as she was on the phone and took off for Omaha. And I didn't get back from Omaha until very, very late, long after she was in bed on the Saturday night. Only early on the Sunday morning did I find out that she'd been worried about me all day Saturday. She'd been asking everybody at the meeting, have you seen Rick? Have you seen Rick? And got them all worried about, well, did he go home? Where is he? What's going on? I had no idea that she would even notice that I wasn't there. I don't know how she did know that I wasn't there. But she just did. I don't know. Anyway, my point is that I would have at least left her a note if I had known that it was going to provoke that kind of a reaction, if I had understood the effect that my absence would have on her. And I think a lot of times maybe the brethren just don't understand the effect that their absence in the assembly may have, because you're not there to see it. You're not there to observe the effect of your absence. Now, elders in particular will tend to notice your absences because it's part of their job to notice that. They like to have the contact of regular meetings because they have the responsibility to keep that contact and watch for your souls as they that must give an account. And they'll take that seriously if they're good elders. I often sit in meetings with elders, and I don't mean the elders here necessarily, but meetings with elders in various elderships, and maybe we have some work or some problem to discuss, and I'll hear them talk amongst themselves of their concern for this brother or that sister. These are the things that keep them laying awake at night. So often the lack of attendance is not so much the problem in itself as it is symptomatic of deeper and progressively more severe spiritual problems that this person may have. It's not the attendance of the meetings in itself or the lack of it, but it's It's what it indicates when somebody is absenting themselves on a regular basis. It's what is indicated by that and what's behind that that is often the problem that is really bothersome. Because there may be somebody who wants to be there, but they just can't because of other circumstances. Attitude in this, as in so many areas of life, is such an important thing. What about a weekend meeting like the one you ordinarily have over the last weekend of September? To me, these types of things should be reviewed periodically as internal matters within the congregation. It's obvious that at one time, the congregation decided it was important enough to have it. And when we've made that decision, then we ought to all put our shoulders to the wheel and help it work. But we do need to remember, too, that the fact that we once set a project in motion doesn't mean that we're destined to do it forever. Because we decided something back in the 40s as a way to go doesn't mean that we have to do it that way forever. There's nothing wrong with taking a break, with exploring other options, but these are decisions we need to make as a group and all be on the same page about them, not go off like a loose cannon on our own. We ought to be able to express ourselves to one another freely on these matters, and once we decide on a way to go, all get on board. So yes, I believe if a congregation has a weekend meeting, the members of that congregation should be there if possible, unless for some reason it has been announced that this is just an optional thing. How do we know? This was brought up at the lunchtime. How do we know if a particular meeting is to be viewed as an assembly of the body? My answer to that is that we know because we decide whether or not that's what it is. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Suppose a congregation is composed of six members living in a given town. Those same six people are also the board of aldermen in that town. Now, when those people get together, how do they know whether it's a meeting of the church or whether it's a meeting of the Board of Aldermen? The only way they know that is because they decide what it is. How else would you know? The only way they know is by deciding what it is and calling it what it is. And they may decide to have both meetings on the same night. They may say, all right, tonight we're going to meet as the church from 7 to 8, and then as the Board of Aldermen from 8 to 9. And they go through both of those meetings back to back, and they do the things that are appropriate in each meeting, and there's no problem at all. Nobody gets confused about which meeting is which. Now, ordinarily, when a congregation invites other people to come and share with it in its assemblies, like you might have the last weekend in September, at least many years you have it, these meetings are generally considered to be general assemblies of the body, and I would say, in my personal judgment, that the members would be obligated to attend if they can. What about the two-week meeting that you have this summer? How important is attendance at that? Well, when your congregation is hosting it, your attendance seems to me to be quite important. Now, if another area congregation is hosting it, if they're having it out at Murray Road or someplace like that, then it seems to me that your attendance is optional unless your elders have directed you otherwise. The two-week meeting, obviously, is planned with full knowledge of the fact that many members' jobs and other obligations will keep them from being present for all of the sessions. It's planned with the full knowledge of that. The general rule seems to be for each person to do the best they can in view of their total situation. And really, as I said, in so many areas, the bottom line becomes attitude. One time I was working in my office, and as usual, I was up against some deadline, and my son came in, this was years ago, my older son came in, said, Dad, can we go down in the woods and shoot the rifle? I said, son, I'm sorry, I can't possibly do that right now. He paused and he looked at me and said, do you wish you could? And I said, yes, son, I sure wish I could. Attitude is such an important thing. So when we think about our jobs and our children's activities in the context of church attendance, we have to take attitude into account. There will be times when our jobs may keep us from the assembly. I think everybody who's been in the church very long and had a job very long understands that. If we do all that we can to keep our absenting from the assemblies to a minimum where our job is concerned, then I think we're doing the best we can. Here is an area of judgment calls. And we have to bear in mind, as I said this morning, but this bears stressing again, that we only answer to one another secondarily on these things. We're answerable primarily to the Lord, and He's the one who knows all about our motives, all about our opportunities, all about our necessities, and He will judge right. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Of course He will. We can fool one another on these issues. There are two main areas here. One is work and the other is sickness. And we can fool each other on those areas. But we won't fool God. Happy is he that condemneth not himself in that thing which he alloweth. Sickness is similar to the job when it comes to missing the assemblies because of sickness. The question has always been with us and always been discussed as long as I can remember. How sick is too sick not to come? And it's a judgment call that you must make. I cannot experience your sickness and decide for you. I have often told people that a particular pain probably won't hurt any more at the meeting house than it does at home. In fact, it may even hurt less if we are successful in the assembly and getting our minds off of ourselves. It may even hurt less. We might forget about ourselves for a while. But it would be very unfair of me. I've just been blessed so amazingly with such tremendous good health now for so many years. For me to judge whether your health is adequate enough for you to be here would be the height of being preposterous. God knows, and it's between you and God. I have often been inspired by those who assemble with the saints in spite of health problems, but it becomes a decision that you and you alone can make for yourself. In the area of our children's activities, this is a little more important than some of these others, I think, because we're dealing with our children and the attitudes that they will form about the assemblies of the saints. As so often in life, a little planning goes a long way. I'll say that first of all. If we have calendars and use them appropriately, a little planning can go a long way in making plans far enough ahead so that some children's activities can be swayed one way or another away from the assemblies of the saints. For instance, when one of my sons was in Little League Baseball, one of the brethren, I think for the very purpose of helping out the church, he became the president of the sports association and scheduled all the games of the kids in the church on nights other than Wednesday night. Well, we really appreciated that. It was a great assistance to the congregation because a lot of the kids were playing ball at the time. But there are obviously going to be children's activities which, in spite of all your planning and in spite of trying to stay out of things that you know will conflict, they'll still come into occasional conflict with the assemblies of the saints. There's no way around that. So once again, we face a judgment call, especially a judgment call about what we're teaching our children. Sometimes it may be appropriate to make an exception to our general rule of choosing church when there's a conflict. Generally, we should choose church when there's a conflict, I believe. But sometimes I think it's appropriate to make an exception. When a child has an obligation to a team, or a child has an obligation to a play, or some group of other people that are depending on that child, I think that we should go to that thing rather than go to the Assembly of the Saints. That's what I personally believe about it. And I do believe that children can understand an exception, that we think the church is most important and we ordinarily assemble with the saints, but because of this or that unusual situation, we're going to make an exception tonight. Children can understand that type of thing if we make sure that it is an exception. Now, if we look for reasons not to have to go to church, then children will understand that too. It's mighty hard to fool your kids. You can fool the people in the church a lot quicker than you can fool your children about these types of things. Some of you who are as old as I am, and I'm going to conclude with this because I don't like to penalize those who do come by keeping you overtime, and we're coming up right toward our hour again in 5 minutes. But I want to conclude with this thought about a Jewish man. If you're as old as I am, you can remember, maybe, when legendary baseball pitcher Sandy Koufax, who was Jewish, refused to pitch in a crucial game of the World Series. This was back in the early 60s, I believe, and I remember it impressed me at the time. He refused to pitch in this very crucial game of the World Series for the New York Yankees because this day fell on Yom Kippur, which is the Jewish Day of Atonement, one of their most important and sacred days. He just flatly refused to pitch there, even though everybody wanted him to. He refused to do it. Now, that type of decision makes a statement of conviction that the world needs to hear from us. But the final decision, the final choice has to be yours. And my suggestion is this. If you're having difficulty in this area, I strongly recommend discussing it with your elders. If you're missing meetings, they would probably appreciate an explanation of why, given as candidly as you can. They are concerned for your soul, and maybe a meeting of the minds isn't as far away as it might at first appear. Hopefully we all have the same goal. Elders do have authority in this area, but we hope and we have assurances, I think, that it will be exercised with the same discretion that you saw in them when you asked them to be your elders in the first place. The important thing here, bottom line, is to remember that we have enlisted in an army and we need to march together just as soldiers do. If we get out of step with each other, then we're stepping on each other's heels, we're knocking each other's shoes off, and we're out of line, we're out of step. Paul said in the 2 Thessalonian letter that we need to be in step rather than having a disorderly walk. We need to close ranks and march forward together unto glory. I leave these thoughts with you, and I appreciate the opportunity of discussing these things with you today. We're going to conclude by extending the Lord's invitation. We're marching forward together toward that day, that great day that's going to come that we're about to sing about in number 431. Let's stand together and sing.